Welcome to Creative Therapy Umbrella, the podcast, a place where we talk about everything creative therapy or expressive therapy related. Play therapy, music therapy, art therapy, dance, drama, pet therapy. We really try to touch on as much as possible. So on today's episode, I speak with Shelby Dawson. She is a music therapist who works at a really amazing school in upstate New York, and she shares, we talk about a lot of different stuff, but she shares her experience as a school-based therapist and the unique kind of experiences that come with that. And she also talks about her experience with burnout, and we get into a pretty heavy discussion about salaries as young therapists. So this is a great episode. I know that this has been a big topic as well online on Facebook. I've been seeing it talked about a lot. So stay tuned if you want to hear someone else's perspective from that as well. Also, if you haven't signed up for our newsletter yet, definitely get on that because Shelby shares a really cool intervention today, and those materials will be in the newsletter that goes out in a couple weeks. You can sign up at www.creativetherapyumbrella.com/newsletter. Also, stay tuned at the back end of this episode for a really cute listener story. Enjoy the episode. Okay, Shelby, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Again. Full disclosure, Shelby and I have already recorded and had some technological issues. So Shelby's so wonderful and she's letting me record again with her. So thank you.
No prob.
We just had a really fantastic practice run. So now we're just, we're going for it again.
It's going to be perfect now.
Exactly. And now this time we also get to do the Would You Rather, which we didn't get to do last time. So it's going to be a lot more fun, I think.
I am pumped.
All right. Are you ready for it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This one was Bree sent this one out on Facebook when I had asked a few weeks ago. And the Would You Rather is, would you rather play guitar with fingernails that are too long or sing with a sinus infection?
I literally just bit off on my nails the other day in the middle of a session because I couldn't play it right because they were too long. But I would say the nails for sure.
Yeah? You'd go with having the long nails?
Yeah, because I honestly, being sick is, awful. It's even worse. I can't. And I get sick a lot, so.
So you have, plenty of practice with, unfortunately, too much.
Yeah. Yep. And when I sing, I'm like, I go hard or go home. So I'm I can't really rein it in. So
it's so hard too. I was just talking about this at work of actually Shelby and I have worked together. So I think there were several times that Shelby, you saw me with laryngitis days of I have no voice. What do I do? Lots of recorded music and different types of musical games. Cause our voice, when you don't have it, it's pretty, pretty limiting.
Yeah. But also you just if you have a sinus infection, you just your whole body feels awful.
So true.
So I would take fingernails over that any day.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's really, I think I agree with you. I think I would go with that too, because I've never actually had a sinus infection until I moved to Colorado and I got a terrible one. And I was like, what is wrong with me?
I had no idea.
It really, really was terrible. So I think I'd be able to focus more with the long dangly fingernails and find some way to move around it of playing ukulele or something. I don't know.
I was literally just on the other day, I don't know where I saw this, but I saw someone talking about how Dolly Parton plays guitar with those long talon nails. And she actually just has it in an open tuning at all times and then does bar chords or just bars the frets up and down instead of playing basic chords.
You figured it out for everybody. Now we
know. You're welcome. There you go. I mean, Dolly figured it out.
The sun in the sky. that with that. Yeah, I never even thought about that. That's a great idea. I actually, yeah. You know, Joni Mitchell, I'm a huge Joni Mitchell fan, and she had polio growing up. So she's still really weak in her left hand and arm, I guess. So all of her, and I remember, I only remember learning this because I tried to learn some of her stuff on guitar and I was like, what tuning is this? Mm-hmm. She'd adapt all of her tuning so that she could more easily get the chords because they were just too hard for her. Just regular tuning was too difficult. I don't think it was open tuning though. I think she did something else weird because it was kind of different, kind of odd tuning. But yeah, it's funny how, you know, I thinking of different tuning has been like fresh on my mind. I don't usually think about that too often, but
yeah,
it's such a great trick to be able to utilize.
Yeah. I love doing it whenever like I'm just like playing around. I love doing like an open D or an open G or something.
Yeah.
It's just harder to do at work because I only have like my one guitar and I have different purposes for it for all my clients. So I'm like, oh, I don't have time to like tune this every single session. But
like mess around with it. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely for my own fun, it's a fun thing to play with.
Yeah. And I actually just had, I just interviewed Wade Richards the other day and mm-hmm. we were talking about his adapted tuning book for adapted.
Yeah.
Richard's method, which if you haven't listened to that episode, go listen to it because it's great. But now I'm like, oh man, I think that's going to be like my challenge for the week is to go mess around with different tunings because it's coming up so frequently and it's such a good tool for us to have.
Yeah, it's really fun.
Well, Shelby, so tell us how you got into music therapy. What was your, you know, were you musical as a kid? Did you, you know, like to sing a lot? And let us know how you got here.
Yeah, so I was always singing. Singing has always been my primary instrument. I remember when I was like, I think like maybe 11, I sang like the national anthem at a big like hockey arena before a hockey game. My dad was the coach for a local college. And that was like 6,000 people or something crazy like that. So that was like a lot. But ever since then, like, I mean, basically like, I feel like I was kind of like just placed on that path of like, music's what you're going to do. Like, that's just like what you need to do. It's the gift that you have to share. So, so I ended up at Berklee College of Music with the intention of majoring in songwriting. But I never actually followed through with that. I took, songwriting classes and did all of that, but I found it to be a very solitary major. I love songwriting. It's definitely like my biggest love of music. That art form is just like the most satisfying thing. But my favorite part about it was co-writing. I didn't really love like just it being told to go sit in a room and write something. Like I couldn't really do it on demand in that way. Especially if I wasn't given like a purpose or a structure. So I took the intro to music therapy class. I kind of realized like maybe I could utilize that songwriting with like my clients and that kind of gives me like that co-writing kind of feel. And then it also gives me the structure because I usually have a purpose for every song that I write or every intervention that I write for a client. And I'm just a person who needs to have that structure in order to get my creativity going. I can't just like pull it out of thin air. I need to have like a purpose. So, So when I graduated from Berklee, I came back to Rochester and I've been here ever since.
That is awesome. Good. And thank goodness that you didn't continue with songwriting because you are
a
music therapist.
Oh, thank you.
Sorry, songwriting world. And how awesome that you can. I mean, songwriting, I think, too, it's just one of the most creative things that we can do as music therapists. It's just such a fun, if it's lyric songwriting or just musical songwriting, it's such a fun creative space to be in.
Yeah.
So you said that for you, that creative process of writing, that you need that structure of kind of like there needs to be a purpose behind it. Mm-hmm. Do you find that like with your creativity in general, with songwriting, with coming up with interventions, is there usually like a catalyst like that beforehand? Like it's kind of like oh man, this thing isn't working for this kiddo. I need to write something to make it happen. Or like, oh, I need this, you know, here's this new goal for this kiddo. And I don't really have a lot of interventions. I need to write something. Is that what it's like for you?
Yeah. A lot of times, especially because I use a lot of visual aids in my work with my students. And I find that like, so I'll have a goal and I'll be like, oh, what am I going to do about this? And then I'll look for some sort of visual aid that I could use, or I'll create a visual aid that I could use. And then based on that visual aid is how I create the song.
Cool.
That I use with that. Yeah. So like whether it's like Pinterest, I get a lot of ideas off of Pinterest. Like I have a lot of things that are made by like SLPs or OTs or something like anything like that. And I'm able to kind of make it more of a music-based intervention while still kind of addressing those same skills that those types of disciplines are working on. Mm-hmm. But then when it comes to like songwriting with clients, I, you know, there are times where I'll like pre-write kind of the song a little bit and have like blanks that they'll fill in or something like that. But what I really like doing when it's applicable is doing songwriting in the moment, like with the client. Mm-hmm. So whether that's like, you know, like looking up like images on the internet that we want to include in the song to help us like remember what we're supposed to be singing about, we'll do that together. And then we'll go through and think of like certain keywords that we need, or like certain like phrases that we want to use if it's like a social song, or if it's like even an academic song, like certain language that needs to be in the song kind of helps us structure the song and figure out what kind of words we need to have that rhyme and things like that. So
Yeah,
so doing that with my clients is probably my favorite way to do it. But
that's awesome. And that is, I feel like when you're that like on the spot songwriting, I'm thinking of Betsy, Dr. King, and I think she was Betsy Brunk King at that time when she wrote the songwriting book for music therapists, like that on the spot where you're just like going with it and being so improv. Nope, the word's not coming to me.
Improvisatory.
Improvisatory. It's 9 a.m. here, guys. Haven't had all of my coffee yet. So I love hearing about how you're structuring, like you almost have like these kind of mini structures within that really open, because when you're on the spot songwriting, it is so like you almost can't give it as much structure as when you're behind the session doing all of this stuff. When you're coming in, like you have to have that flexibility. So it's interesting to hear like how you might have like some visuals or some phrases or kind of those grounding pieces to have that freedom, but then to still stay focused.
Yeah, definitely. It can be hard at times to, you know, like the form and everything is stuff that I will kind of stick to, and I kind of will make the decisions about the form a little bit based on like, no, the chorus needs to come first because that's how we get that kind of that hook in our brain. And like, I know that my client might not know that though. So like I make that decision to put that first. And usually the like chorus isn't anything that's like has a lot of content in it, but it's really catchy. So that kind of makes it easier for us to get back into the verses and memorize the verses if we have like a refrain that's like really easy and catchy, even if it's just like a ooh or an ah.
Yeah.
like the millennial ooh or whatever it's called, the millennial wah or something.
I don't know what that is. I'm behind the times. Oh my gosh.
I feel like it's called the millennial ooh. It's like a phenomenon in pop music that's happening over the last like 5 years where the choruses are all really just like a vowel sound.
Now that you're saying it, okay, I can totally hear that in some of the pop songs, which is awesome for songwriters.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really easy. It's great if you're working on like speech skills.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Ooh, so, any of those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. I love that idea too of like utilizing that. I think like when approaching songwriting too, and I love songwriting, although I don't feel like it's not nearly my strongest suit at all, but when I approach it, it can be really daunting. And thinking about something like, oh, you know, you can just have like an ooh section, an ah section. And like even later on, you know, months down the line, you could have that as a background sound and add something over it if you wanted to, if you were still working on the song or if you come back to it.
Yeah.
But I almost like that idea, the millennial ooh of, you know, kind of realizing as like, hey, that's a great tool. It's still catchy. It can still target a lot of goals and it can make the songwriting process a little bit less daunting.
Yeah, definitely. And anything you can do with like recording, like is so motivating for a lot of clients. Mm-hmm. And for me, because it helps me remember it. Because if you write a ton of songs in a week, like you're not going to remember all of them. So.
Nope. I did the same thing. I just found myself the other day. I have a kiddo who really enjoys books and will pick any like random books. And then I just sing and make up a melody to it. And I think it was Where the Wild Things Are is what came up.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, go, let's sing it, you know, just kind of figuring out a melody as I go. And it's really difficult because that song has no consistency with like, there, you know, the words are all over the place. There's no rhyming. There's no set structure. Everything is kind of off.
Yeah.
And I started singing to it and I was like, nope, this is some other pop song. And I was like, I can't, that one is clearly stuck in my head from like 2 days ago working with a client and it just like kept coming out.
Yep. That happened to me. Like for some of these books, they all have like the same rhyme scheme and the same like rhythm to them. And I'm just like, oh, I'm doing the same exact melody for this. Like I need to switch it up. It's just, it's hard to get those out of your head sometimes.
It is. It's true. And then too, it's even hard to memorize those words. Cause then it's like, oh, I'm piggybacking off of this song that
yeah.
might be a piggyback off of something else. And yeah, it's like, I love having those new fresh melodies, those new catchy sounds, because it helps you. And I feel like it energizes me too. I'm like, yeah, this is exciting.
Yeah.
And then it is so much easier to remember when it's not the words from two different songs are coming in and like hitting each yep. other, fighting to come out.
Yes, I can relate to that wholeheartedly.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I feel like we just talked about so many, you know, awesome challenges and moments just in the songwriting, you know,
yeah.
topic that we were on. But so Shelby, can you tell us about a moment that you've had recently that was really exciting in your work or just one of those earth-shattering therapy moments?
Yeah. So backing track a little bit, I work at a school for individuals with varying abilities. And it's called Holy Childhood. And so basically I have students from like 42 different districts and it's all IEP based services. And one of my students is 18 years old or was at the time of this. And last year at the end of the year, we had a music therapy recital and it was the first one that has been done in quite a few years. So people were really excited to have it happen. So it was like probably, I think it was like at 6 o'clock at night. So parents could be there and it was like just a big whole thing and really exciting. And I had a student who we had been practicing on doing a drum performance on a gathering drum to TNT by AC/DC. It was yes. awesome. Yeah. It was like rock and roll. And we had been practicing it for like 2 months and like, she knew what she was doing. She had done it great every single time. Like that's what I was expecting because that's what she has shown me every single time in the music room. And she of course like rocked it. She did a fantastic job, like up there. So proud of herself. So happy. Like it was fantastic. She bowed at the end, went back down. It was great. And after the recital, she was with her parents and her parents approached me and said that they were fully prepared for her not to even get up on the stage because transitions can be hard for her. But I hadn't really been seeing that behavior at all. So I was not expecting that to be a problem at all. So it just kind of reminded me how lucky I am to see my students at their best because I really do get to see them at their best. Most of the time. And even when it feels like they're not necessarily progressing, they really are making a ton of progress. And it's important to be able to notice that in relation to the other areas of their life and in other settings.
It's so awesome. I love that story so much. I think it's really, it's so powerful, and it does, I feel like that's like that a perfect example of one of those things that makes you step back where you're like, whoa, you know. I think as creative therapists, we see really a lot of times we see the best of our clients, you know, doing these really creative things, these awesome moments where they're just in their zen, and it's hard. And we just don't see it, or, you know, to remove that and then, you know, look at this person as all in their other environments and the other places where, you know, they may struggle much, much more in much more, I can't think of the word. They just have more difficult struggles that may not be present when we see them. And it's so humbling to see that. And then to see their motivation for the creative modality that they're in is just like,
yeah,
yes, it's
such a win.
Yes,
such a win. It was exactly. Awesome.
Such a win.
Yeah.
I love that so much. And it's amazing, you know, ACDC. And
I know. It was awesome. Everyone in the audience was just like headbanging. Like, it was great.
Yes. Yes. And that is like, too, like when I'm so passionate about those, like of self-esteem and, you know, those byproducts a lot of times of creative stuff, you know, that, like, I mean, what a bigger like high for, you know, a kid to like get on stage and everybody's like rocking with them and just like, mm-hmm. I'm getting chills just thinking about it. I can't imagine how it felt for that kiddo, and that you were able to facilitate that too is just like,
yeah. It was, awesome. I'm very lucky to be in that position. It was awesome.
Sounds like a great position, like a place that you really are flourishing in.
Yeah, definitely. I love it.
That's awesome. So you do a lot of, for our listeners, and I only know this too because I also used to be in New York, and New York has the awesome benefit of having lots of music therapy in schools. Go New York. But that is not the case in all states. So in Colorado, there is almost little to no music therapy in schools, within school districts. So can you tell us a little bit about that process? What is, you know, music therapy in schools like for you?
Yeah, so this is a little bit different just because it's a organization that is not a school district itself, but it takes students from districts, so from multiple districts, and they come and they're bused in and they're placed in our school for a variety of reasons. It's usually need based, so whatever their, you know, needs are that aren't being met at their district, that's why they're placed at Holy Childhood. Everything is IEP based. Our positions are funded through the services that we provide on the IEPs. So we have it depends on the day, but anywhere from 6 to could be 9 sessions a day. 6 is like very low. That's not usually how it is. So we'll do 3-to-1 groups, 2-to-1 groups, and then individual sessions. We will write our own music therapy goals for the students as applicable, or we will work on team goals with other services, so like speech, OT, PT, education, like academic goals. And then we also have a lot of work skills goals. Our school has a really awesome work-based learning program to get the kids out in the community and get them jobs and get them that experience to move into the workforce as adults. So a lot of times we'll be supporting those goals as well. It's a really, really magical place to be. I love it so much. We've got 3 music therapists now, so it's awesome. We just hired our 3rd one.
Yes. Expanding program.
Yeah. Crazy. Win.
Yeah. So it sounds like too, now with IEP based, when you're doing IEP based work. So I did my internship in a similar setting where it was a school, but the students were from a variety of different districts, but the music therapy program was a little bit more, program based. So it wasn't IEP based. So every kiddo in the school got music therapy in the group setting. So that wasn't on IEPs. So there wasn't a lot of the as much of the administration type of work of progress notes, you know, meeting with the IEP stuff. We did that on a smaller scale. So how does that affect your job now that you're, all of your stuff is IEP based? What does that other end look like for you of what's outside of the clinical work?
It's a lot of paperwork, like a lot. And I have about 30 students. Or last year I had 32 or 33 students. This year I think I have like 28, and that's because our students only have services either once or twice a week. Very, very few have three times a week. Like it's very rare to have more than that. So that means to fill our schedule, we have to have more students. So that also means like 28 students worth of paperwork. Yeah. So every single session we do, there is a daily note written for every single student who receive services in that group or in that individual session. So usually it's like, this year it's been awesome. It's been like 10 notes, like notes per day. Last year I was doing 16 notes per day. Yeah, we were at our tipping point. It was really a lot. So this year it's been nice so far. And then we do our quarterly benchmarks, which we'll upload into IEP Direct. Just like our daily notes, we also put those into IEP Direct. And then we'll do like our CSE, like annual review meetings. We do three-year reeval meetings. We do our music therapy assessments to get kids music therapy. And then we also have to do the reeval assessments. So that includes like observation in the classroom, doing an evaluation assessment session, and then doing all of the paperwork that's associated with that. So yeah, it's a lot of paperwork. We are trying really hard to be able to give some of the classrooms like a fun music group once or twice a month. Mm-hmm. But with all that extra like documentation, we're definitely spread thin, but not as thin as last year. So that's why we're trying to kind of do a couple more of those fun groups this year since we have a little more time in our schedule. But yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, for sure. Paperwork. I feel like in my experience in different settings, paperwork can be so different in so many different places. And working within school districts or specialized schools, it's always just interesting to hear about the other side of, you know, this is what we're doing as music therapists when we're doing music therapy, but then there's this whole other piece that goes along with, you know.
Yeah. And as hard as it is, to do all of that stuff, I also feel like it's kind of my responsibility to do that because Holy Childhood is a place that's treating us the same as all of the other service providers there. And they are holding us to those same standards. And I think that that is really awesome and really needed, and more places need to do that. So
100%. So well said. I am also a huge fan on paperwork, as ridiculous as it sounds, not only because I think it's a balance of not being overly burned out by just being a clinician constantly. Mm-hmm. And like, it's kind of a moment to step back. And I find the reflection of doing notes at my current job, I also have to do a note for every time I see a client. And I feel like it's made me a better clinician to like reflect back to see like, wow, we did this for this reason. This is how the client responded. This is why it's important for the client. And then, you know, should I keep doing this? You know, what's the plan for next time? Like, yeah, let's keep doing this for a couple more. Maybe next time we'll add XYZ. And it's just so nice to have that time to, that structured time to reflect. And I feel like it just projects the progress so much more.
Yeah. And it makes annual reviews and benchmarks so much easier too, because I'll have it all uploaded in IEP Direct and I can print it all out once so that I can like just see all of the things that I've written in a line. Yeah. So that makes it a lot easier just to track data, which is awesome. So it's been a good experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's a hard thing to balance with like, I think it just depends on the person. Some people are like, I could do 40 straight hours a week of, being, you know, in the moment with a client. And then some people are like, no, I need that like administrative time to like shut off.
Yeah. And I mean, really, if you're doing music therapy, you should have that administrative time because you should be taking notes.
So. Yes, exactly. And I think, like you said, too, like we should be upholding ourselves to the standard of all these other therapists who are required to do those notes. Ethically, as therapists, if you're in a therapeutic field, I just took a ethics class for getting my LPC and note-taking was such a huge, huge piece. I was like, wow, we're spending 4 hours on about notes. And like, because it's so important that we're ethically, and if you have a license, you're legally required, but depending on the state. But it just holds us to that standard of like, we're actually following through with what we're doing. We're taking that time to reflect. And we also, if you're, you know, working 25 client hours a week, then you should be having that administrative time that, you know, if you're not doing session planning, you should be reflecting on your sessions and showing that progress.
Yeah. And I had to learn pretty quickly because I was writing like excessively long notes. Like they were ridiculous. Like I don't know.
Everyone does that. Yes.
I know. And the assistant director was like, you know, like you could just write like the few sentences as long as you get these like main points of information in, that's all we need. And I was like, okay. So it took a little time and they're still honestly longer, but
it's
hard. Makes it easier if you take a little easy on yourself. You don't need to be like ridiculous about it, but.
Oh, the administrative side of things. So much fun. Well, let's dive into the clinical side of stuff. We've talked a lot about that, the back end piece of being a music therapist, you know, what goes on administratively and all of that. But what about, let's hear maybe about an intervention that you're super pumped to share. Something about, you know, that, let's hear about being in a session. I think that'll be awesome.
Yeah. So I brought you a Halloween intervention because that's right around the corner. It's my favorite season.
It sure is.
Favorite holiday and season.
Shelby is amazing at coming up with Halloween costumes. I'm so jealous. I do not get to see them anymore.
Oh, we already have our one planned for this year.
You do. I'm pretty excited. Can you share it?
Yeah. So me and the two other music therapists at work, we're going to be Monsters, Inc. Yeah. So so Shannon, who's my co-music therapist, she's actually pregnant, so she's gonna be Mike Wazowski with an eyeball on her belly.
Oh,
it's gonna be great.
Gosh, that's so cute.
I know. Connor's gonna be Sully and I'm going to be Boo.
That is amazing.
Yeah, I'm hoping the kids will figure it out, because if we're like apart, it's just gonna be weird. We have to like be together for it to like make sense.
yes, for sure.
But like, yeah, so we'll see.
But anyway, I love that so much. It's so nice to have a couple of other therapists to do that with, that you can do group Halloween stuff.
Yeah, last year Shannon and I were Cuckoo Kangaroo and it was the best thing ever. If you don't know that, look up Cuckoo Kangaroo on YouTube and your life will be changed forever.
I love it. It's fantastic. Cool. Yes. So let's hear your Halloween intervention.
Okay. So I have a lot of kids who have speech goals. And so this song can kind of address like working on prepositions, or it can work on following directions. I have a visual for it. So it's a Halloween haunted house. I sent it to you. I don't know if you have it, but
yeah,
okay, good.
That will be... You sign up for the newsletter, you can get all of these downloads. So sign up.
Cool. Cool. So yeah. So it's a Halloween haunted house, and then it has all of these different little Halloween items. So it has like a pumpkin and a ghost and a witch and a cat and whatnot. And then the directions are on the backside, and it says all of the directions. So like, put the cat in the window, or put the pumpkin on the house, or put the ghost in the door, or whatever. You know, just kind of working on like reading those directions and then doing it, or hearing those directions and then doing it. So that's kind of what I'm working on with this song. So there are a ton of adaptions you can do for it. So it's just really, really simple to keep it as adaptable as possible. Okay, it goes like this. Creepy, spooky, haunted house. creepy, spooky, haunted house. What goes bump in the night? Boo! Put the ghost in the door. Or something like that.
I love it. The boo part.
Yeah, you got to make that really dramatic. I held it in here, but you got to make it hardcore. Yeah. And then the bump, you can have them like bump on a drum or on the table or anything. Like you can do so much with this song. You could use a stuffed like pumpkin and hide it around the room or whatever you want to do. But
yes,
just so a fun jingle.
Yes, I love that so much. There's so many things you can target with that. That's great.
Yeah.
There's you know, preposition, speech, but then like social stuff. If you're using a pumpkin to pass around or a drum on the bump, you know, everybody gets a turn to do bump and physical skills. And oh my goodness, I love that. So cute. I'm definitely going to be using that this year. I have a couple kids that I think would love the boo and the bump.
To fight over the boo or the bump. They're the best parts. They're both great.
Boo and who's going to be the bump?
Awesome. I don't blame them.
I know. Halloween really is just so much fun coming up with interventions. It's just like,
I know. I live for it.
Yeah, I do too. And I don't know if you heard, I haven't gotten it yet. But I'm waiting for it in the mail and I'm very excited. Stephanie Level, she's the creator of Music for Kiddos. Also have another interview with her. It's fantastic. But she just wrote this book. It's called The Shy Little Monster. And it's so adorable. It's about this shy little monster that dresses up as a lobster. And it's like such a cute, and then it's like zippity zappity, sometimes bippity boppity boo. It has this really cool little like really cute little part in it. And I just love that it has a shy Halloween monster in it.
For
all of these shy kiddos out there. Used to be, you know, just like it's so great. So I'm so excited to use that too. So
yes, that's cute. I'll have to look at that.
Yes, it's adorable. I feel like Halloween, it just gives you, there's so many monster characters, so many different things to work with that are like inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Inspire those creative juices for sure. Cool. Oh, I love that. Halloween time. Well, something that I think is to make a dramatic shift from the exciting and fun parts of Halloween, something I think too, and you had mentioned this earlier too, of like, you know, balancing all of the different types of work that we do and, you know, different jobs and all of that stuff. And Shelby and I have talked about this before too, but you know, burnout is such a prevalent thing in our field. I think it's between the first and the fifth year is where the highest rate of burnout is for music therapists, which makes so much sense. Have you felt that, or can you share a little bit about your experience with burnout?
Oh yeah, totally. Yes. So I face burnout very early in my career, before the 2 year mark, around like 1 to 1.5 years. I was working a full time music therapy job, right out of internship. And on top of that, I was also getting up at 5 AM on the weekends to work a bakery job, for like 8 hour shifts each day of the weekend. So I was working 7 days a week. It was just a lot. Mm-hmm. And I just like, wasn't able to make ends meet with that. I wasn't getting paid enough, at all, like very low. And it was just really hard to kind of just make life work. I had just gotten married and, you know, I was supposed to kind of be like in the happiest point in my life. And I was feeling like I loved my clients, but I was having a hard time giving them the best that I could give them because I was not, I wasn't able to kind of fill my own cup and I wasn't able to get what I needed. And, you know, it's hard because I know a lot of us don't want to be selfish, but you have to be selfish to provide to provide the best therapy that you can provide. You can't be run down and like miserable and expect to like make your clients have a great time in your sessions. They're going to sense that. So
nothing truer has ever been spoken. You can't pour from an empty cup. Like you have to have a full cup for sure. So like you were saying, I think it's such a really important thing that we don't always think about, especially as therapists. We always want to give, 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 but we have to remember to take and to make sure to find those pieces of what we need so that we can be effective therapists. Because it's not, you're so on the money that we can't be effective, and our clients know it. They know when you're burnt out. They can sense it. That connection isn't there. The interpersonal relationship changes. It's very different for sure. And I think too, like you're saying too, that it's such a hard thing in our profession that isn't talked about as much, that we are not compensated most of the time at what we should be compensated at.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. I think, and I've been really becoming more and more interested in the HR aspect of music therapy.
Yes.
And I'm very lucky to be in the position that I am in now, where I am compensated fairly and I am held up to the same standard as other related services. What I wasn't okay with before this was that I was being held up to a standard like that, but I wasn't being compensated fairly. So it didn't feel like it was balanced at all. Yeah. And so leaving, you know, a job where I felt loyalty to, because of the issue with compensation, was really hard to do. I don't like change. That's like a very difficult thing for me. And it's honestly, sometimes, like, I know a lot of people feel that it this way too. And it's like easier to stay just where it's easy and safe. And it's sometimes harder to make those bigger leaps and changes, especially if you don't know what's going to happen. But I really quickly like realized that, you know, if I wanted to like have a family, if I ever wanted to like make, you know, financial moves in my life, like if I wanted to get to a place where I wasn't going to be like needing to ask people for financial assistance, which is like, I'm 26 years old. Like I shouldn't be needing to do that, you know? Then I needed to make a change. And I was the only one who was going to be able to do that, because waiting around for a change to happen wasn't going to happen. not a significant change. So, I kind of, you know, had been like looking around and listening and trying to find out which music therapy jobs in the area are paid well. There are not a lot. There are very few. They are mostly in the school settings. But it's like not necessarily like contract work. I would say it's like the ones that are in the school, like the in school positions. Mm-hmm. So I literally applied like to Holy Child like the last day of the application deadline at like 9 p.m. at night, because I had been talking myself out of doing it and like self-sabotaging myself. And then I just did it, and I was like, oh, like in the back of my mind, like, oh, it's probably too late. So, but it wasn't. Lucky for me, it was not too late. But, yeah. Like, I just feel like I'm so lucky. And now I feel like I'm in a position where it would be wrong of me to stay quiet about this issue.
Absolutely. And I think that's an amazing like passion project to have that. I think this is something that is, it's not just at the level of like, I think there's certain situations where it's like, you know, maybe I remember this happening a lot with like nursing homes, because it was like, oh, well, we have like a music volunteer that wants to come in, so we're only mm-hmm. going to pay you $15 an hour, you know? And it was like, you know, like that it's such a tough place with that, because administration is kind of like, they don't value what you're doing. And then there's places where they value what you're doing. But then like, I know like for New York State, I don't know if it's still like this, but one of the big problems in New York was if you were doing therapy, creative arts therapy or music therapy, and getting reimbursement for it, the reimbursement rate was ridiculously low, like $40 an hour or something. But if you put it something else, you got more reimbursement. So like there, you know, these problems, just like they go up this giant ladder of like, you know, it's so much of the, I think of like the advocacy groups and, you know, government relations that we have in our, you know, that we're lucky enough to have in a lot of our associations. And I feel like it's the fight that they're all of those things of like getting recognized and having, you know, the state be like, oh, you know, this is a legitimate career. It's legitimate therapy. It should be reimbursed. And then insurance getting on that. And like, there's just all of these moving parts that go with us getting that reimbursement and getting those rates that we deserve, because those jobs, like you said, are not always out there, that everybody can't land the job that is, you know, that has the foundation to do that. And it's something that I think is, it needs to be talked about more, because it's such a hard, it's like a rock in a hard place for sure.
Yeah. And I think what, like a thing that a lot of people, at least from what I'm hearing, because I talk to people about this stuff a lot, like I'm willing to tell people my situation, past and present. I'm willing to, you know, I just feel like that's what we need to do. And I'm hearing a lot of people be very frustrated with businesses that are owned by music therapists who are paying extremely low salaries. And I, you know, again, like I understand it is a reimbursement issue. There are so many issues along with that, but I think that situation in particular is really disheartening for people, especially younger people who are coming into the profession. For that to be like the first experience is like, what did I get myself into here? You know what I mean? Because it's not something that they tell you in college.
It's not talked about. Yeah, I think it's something like, it is an issue. I remember wondering about this too before, of like, there's no like almost career prep class. Like I wish there was at the end or part of your capstone that was kind of like, you know, I know that we have, at least for music therapists, we have the workforce analysis thing that comes out every year, but it's so different. Like obviously for New York is like, okay, you have New York City rolled in with upstate New York, rolled in with Western New York, where, you know, Rochester is a huge hub of music therapy too, which also drives down. If you have a lot of, it's like the saturatedness will drive down cost similar. Yeah. Like Denver has a lot of music therapists and
you have different, so many different kinds. Like you have private like contractors who are probably taking in a lot more than someone who's working for a private practice.
Right.
But that's like the same, you know what I mean? So it's like, it looks like the private, like the contractor is bringing in more for the same work, but like that's probably going to overhead, and like that kind of thing isn't being taken into really into consideration.
Yes.
I
don't know if you've noticed this too, but I feel like I see this question on Music Therapists Unite all the time. It's like, what am I supposed to be charging? And I feel like if areas or like, you know, places, if all, I wish this could happen. This is me being so ideal about about all of this, but like, everybody needs to get on the same page of like, okay, this isn't about competition. Like this is about us as a profession and raising that tier. What are we all gonna, like, let's agree on something that we should charge, that should give these, you know, these therapists who are starting, they should be getting this rate. We can't give it because somebody else is charging something lower. We have to match that. You know, like I wish everybody could get on the same page of like, no, we're demanding this higher rate because this is what we deserve. If that means there's a dip in stuff, then that means we work through that. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's super ideal, but I don't know what else will help get everybody kind of in those places where that reimbursement is fair on all ends.
Yeah. And I know, like, I mean, in Rochester, the competition is like pretty real.
Yeah. There's a lot of music therapy in Rochester, which is great because you have so many people to talk to
about great music
therapy, but that makes the business end of it hard.
Yeah. Like I can't even imagine having to like go through that. But I think like ethically, you know, like businesses treating employees ethically is the most important thing. And I guess like, I don't know how, like, I just feel like if you can't afford to pay someone fairly, then don't hire them. it's just not ethical. It's not right. And then on the other side, like if you are being offered this incredibly low salary, and I'm guilty of this, do not accept it. Like, please don't accept it, because it's just going to keep happening. Like if people are accepting these, and something that I am trying to do, like to try to kind of make things a little bit easier for the newer professionals, is I like will go on to those websites like Glassdoor and I'll share my salaries, like, because there's not a lot of information out there. When I was trying to negotiate my salaries, I couldn't find anything about like what I should be making in the Rochester area or whatever. So yeah, I'll go in and I'll put those in like in there so that, you know, maybe the next music therapist who's coming along can like see what, you know, they should be looking for or what they shouldn't be looking for or whatever it is that they're looking for. At least they'll have something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I do remember like here, like in some of my classes, we did stuff about like owning your own private practice and like, but that seems like it's almost the only option nowadays, or at least like the best option nowadays for most situations, but that's not necessarily what everybody wants to do or like.
Yes. And I think this takes time too. Like, I feel like in my career too, I'm just kind of figuring out of like, you know, do you want to own your own business? Do you want to build something bigger? Do you want to be a part of like a large corporation? Do you yeah. want all these things? What does that look like? What do the benefits look like in all those different places? What does the travel look like? What is your clinical caseload? There's all these yeah. elements that go into that. And like, and maybe you don't know when you first start, you have to dip your toes and experience all those things. I think that's helped me, you know, just being in that. But like, I think the one thing too that always has helped me move forward with that is like, okay, even if I'm in a place and I'm like, you know, this isn't quite for me, it's process of elimination of like, okay, yeah. you know, this is what I'm doing, you know, for this, and I'm getting this experience, but maybe later I want to move towards this, or maybe try this out and see what it's like. And if it doesn't work, then you move on to find. And I think it's just being honest with yourself of like what those things work for you, what don't, and how you can move forward from that.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I definitely agree. And I think in like whatever direction you go in, to really be mindful about ethics and being an ethical clinician, an ethical, maybe you're a supervisor, an ethical boss, like whatever you are, you need to be as ethical as possible, because this is, you know, like we're trying to be up to par with all these other services and businesses, and you know, we're not there yet.
Yes.
We're not.
Yes. And I hope that we get there soon, because we've got like, we need to be recognized. We're working, you know, I mean, you're taking notes, you're doing all this administrative stuff you spoke on, you know, you're doing all of this stuff. So, you know, why aren't we being reimbursed at, you know, at that rate? And I think this just goes right up that ladder of like, talk to, you know, government relations in your association, you know, go on Glassdoor, mm-hmm. put your salaries there, talk openly about it with people, because I think people want to talk about this. And I think hearing all sides of this issue is only going to help us move upwards. There,
yeah.
like talking about all of these different problems we're not going to fix it and not going to be able to move forward, especially because we're a whole, you know, profession. We want to move to that place together. So like, let's all
I've said it before and I'll say it again, but we like literally can't afford to not talk about it.
Yeah.
We cannot.
That's the best quote ever. We can't afford literally to not talk about it anymore.
We can't. I mean, like, so there's true. No like this coyness of like talking about salaries in across all fields, like I feel like is getting broken down across, like, you know, females in all of these professions are like coming out and saying this is how much I make and it's not okay, and like we deserve to do that too. Granted, like most of us are females, if there are, you know, male music therapist, hey, but like, you know what I mean? Like we're a helping profession, but we should be able to pay our bills. And if we're not able to pay our bills with our job, it's not the right job.
Right. Yes. And I think that having this conversation, like you said, is the only way we're going to be able to move forward. And we're all therapists. Like, we all know, you know, like, we can all sit down and talk about this stuff and, you know, get ourselves together and figure out a way to move forward. And I think there's a lot of people who are, especially, I always default to the association of, you know, government relations, you know, the people who are, they're constantly on that of like, how can we need to get this. So insurance will do this. Like, they go talk to those people. I know our Mid-Atlantic region had so many great people doing that. I know out here in our region, there's people doing that too. And that's the stuff too. You know, there's the little things that we can do day to day, those conversations, keep having them. And then there's those bigger things too, of like, trying to like, let's just get in those things and get really active, because that's going to funnel down back to us into that smaller piece of us being able to not burn out and do self-care and not have to work another job and all of those.
Oh yeah. It's a direct correlation. Like,
exactly.
Such a direct correlation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. We have to move together to do it. Mm-hmm. So we literally can't afford to not talk about it. I love it. Well, Shelby, this has been amazing. So I like to wrap up on a higher note, if you will.
Sure.
Especially after talking about passion projects, they can be so, it's hard. It's, you know, the harder stuff that we deal with from day to day and bigger picture, little picture stuff. So, but I like to ask, what was your hooray for the past week or two? I know you just started back in schools too, but a moment that you had in this past week that was like, yeah, just a great moment, something exciting, anything that's happened for you?
Let me think.
Yeah.
I've got a student who I just adore. Like, he's just such a wonderful, wonderful kid. So funny. And I have to be pretty theatrical with him to get him to like do most things I want him to do. And on the first day that I had him back, he was like trying to roll up his yoga mat after doing like a mindfulness thing in his classroom, and I was supposed to take him to music. So I just like laid down on the floor with him for a while. And he was just like hiding his face. And then after a couple of minutes, he like was like looking at me and like peeking at me and sort of like giggling. And then like finally just like bear hugged me. And I was like, oh boy, here we go. And I was like, you're ready to go to music. And it was just, we brought the yoga mat with us to music. And then did yoga in the music room.
Love that.
I don't know, for like most students that probably wouldn't be like a win, but he just brings me such joy that like is, that was truly one of my most favorite parts of the week, because he just makes me feel so happy. So.
Yes! What a hooray. I love that. I can like feel the joy pouring out from you via the computer.
Oh yeah. Our sessions are pure joy. Like, I just can't even, it's the cutest.
Your heart explodes every time.
Literally.
I love that. And I love how like talking about the dramatic stuff and then yoga too. I'm really excited too, because on the podcast, I'm hoping to have, I have a drama therapist that I'll be interviewing in a few weeks. I have a therapist who specializes in yoga as well. And like,
oh, cool.
I love hearing people that are bringing in all these other creative modalities into, you know, we're creative therapists. So having those other pieces and not ignoring them, you know, obviously we're all staying within our scope of practice, but like bringing those elements in to help these kiddos and help our clients. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. And he loved it. He did a good job.
That's so awesome. I just got
the other day. It was a vacuum. We cleaned my room.
Oh, I love it. I have so many kids, the vacuum. I don't know what it is about vacuums, but I'm like, all right. I wish
I'll
I had
take it.
One, because
sure.
We would really clean. Let's go clean my carpet and sing a song to it. Especially if I can get you to hit those goals, we'll do it.
Heck yeah.
I love it. All right. Well, Shelby, this was amazing. Thanks again for coming on again and doing this.
No prob. Happy to do it. It was a little different this time. It was
awesome.
Good.
I know. I liked it. Oh, also before we go, let our listeners know if they're interested in talking to you more, if they have questions about school districts and your experience, how can they find you? How can they talk with you?
Yeah. I'm always available on Instagram. I think it's private, but I'm not really sure. I can make it not private if we need to, but yeah. So Instagram is LaShelb, LaShelb.
Awesome.
And then my email is sdolson@holychildhood.org. And I'm always available through those.
Awesome. And I will have that in the show notes as well. I'll have a link to your email. So if people are interested, they can reach out to you. Cool. Yeah. All right, Shelby. Well, have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much, Kate. Have a great one.
Thank you. I feel pretty pumped after that episode to go and talk with, I don't know, do some grassroots stuff, like Shelby mentioned, even just talking with other therapists. But then also going to state task forces and, you know, government relations. We have so many hardworking individuals through AMTA and through our regional associations, as well as through the world organizations, all working towards making our workplace better, and in so many different ways, salary included, but in other ways as well, and advocating for the awesomeness of what we do as therapists. So and this is specific to music therapy, but I feel that way even as therapists in general. And as mental health continues to evolve, we need to be supporting it as much as we can. And it's exciting to get involved in some of those things. So I hope that you feel excited to do that too after this episode. But I wanted to share a story from Nicole. She sent me an email, and her email says, "Hey, Kate, your podcast inspired me to use nature in my session yesterday." She's referring to the episode with Mika McLean. I think it's episode number 4. She says, "We spent about 45 minutes outside exploring nature and using items to turn into instruments. We used rocks, leaves, grass, sticks, and other various items found in the backyard. The client created his own ocean drum using a splash block, which drains water from pipes, and putting rocks in it and shaking it. He found some plastic pipes outside and put rocks in them and taped the ends shut to turn this into a maraca. He taped sticks to a rock and slid it down the slide into a pile of other rocks for a crashing sound." She goes on to share a lot of really cool ways that this client turned nature into music. I love it so much. Nicole, thank you for sharing that. Other listeners, write in and let me know what has been helpful to hear from the podcast, what you like, what you want more of. These things, these stories are great for other people to hear. So let us know, because I think a lot of people like hearing them, and it's even more inspiring besides the guests themselves. It's inspiring to hear how people are using these ideas. So write in. You can reach me at creativetherapyumbrella@gmail.com. You can find me on Instagram. I'm on Facebook as well. I love hearing from people. So write in. I'd love to hear some stories. Again, don't forget to sign up for the newsletter. You can probably hear my dog barking. She's like, get on it. The newsletter, Shelby shared a really cool intervention, and that will be going out pretty soon. So thank you guys so much again for listening, and be creative.